Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can start getting to a healthy weight and get on with your life, because that is what it's all about. How amazing to wake up and think about your day, not about your diet. If you'd like to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what's on your mind, what's weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, or any kind of emotional eating is not food. Food is not the problem. Food is the solution to the problem, actually. The real problem is what's eating at you, not what you're eating. Okay, so let me get to a question from a listener. This is from Kayla from LA. And she says, I can't stop eating donuts. I can't stop thinking about donuts. I know you say that there's no such thing as a food addiction, but I believe I'm addicted to donuts. How do I change? Well, you know, Kayla, this reminds me of a former patient who I'm calling Ariana. All the names are changed. And she also could not stop eating donuts. And she said, donuts are my downfall. I have no willpower. And she would come in every week and she would talk about how, you know, she was addicted to donuts. They were her downfall. And what we noticed is that these donut cravings kind of struck out of the blue and were overpowering, irresistible. Like as soon as she started thinking about it, she couldn't not go to the donut shop and get donuts. And when she was there, she couldn't get one donut. She couldn't. So she one day she told me that as she was driving home from work earlier in the week, she suddenly felt this like total need for donuts. She said she drove right to Winchell's. She could not stop herself. Like she was on automatic, like, you know, her car steered itself to Winchell's. Like there was just no stopping this donut craving. And then she said she ate them in her car. Of course she got like six of them, telling herself that she would bring some for other people. But yeah, that went out the window. And she said she was like eating donuts in her car, parked in the parking lot, feeling this horrible combination of relief and misery, and like crying, and she still couldn't stop eating the donuts. And what she told me was that she would never lose weight if this keeps happening. So I asked Ariana what was going on before this sudden overpowering donut, you know, mind took over, you know. And she said that she was listening to music, and she had her playlist on, and a Frank Sinatra song had started playing. She's listening to the Frank Sinatra song, and she started smiling like in this sort of wistful, like sweet way. And she told me she used to listen to Frank Sinatra with her grandfather, and that it really brought back memories. Now, Ariana was very close to her grandfather, who had developed Alzheimer's and often didn't recognize her. And she started talking about how hard it was to kind of lose him while he's still there. Like, he's there, but he's not there. And she started talking about that, and all of a sudden, she stopped. And she said, you know, I don't want to talk about this. This is just too sad. I don't want to go there. And then she said, so let's get back to the subject. Like, how do I stop getting triggered by donuts? And I said, well, wait a minute. You're not triggered by donuts. You were triggered by Frank Sinatra. Frank, the man. I love Frank Sinatra. Gotta tell you. Hearing Frank Sinatra music brought up these painful thoughts about her grandfather, and that was the problem. The donuts were her solution to the problem, and that gave her comfort and distraction. And by the way, getting a little psychoanalytic here, because I'm a psychoanalyst, that's what I do, the hole in the donut probably represented the something that was missing, the hole in her life, which was like the loving, close relationship that she had with her grandfather that no longer existed because he wasn't really there. And so she did not realize she was being triggered because she started thinking about donuts before the uncomfortable feeling reached her awareness. And it's sort of what she did in her conversation with me. We started talking about the painful feeling, and then suddenly it was, hey, I don't want to talk about this. Let's talk about donuts. That's what she did in the car. I don't want to feel this. Let me think about donuts. Let me have a donut. Let me think about that. Let me think about why I can't stop eating donuts. It's a lot less painful to think about why you can't stop eating donuts than it is to think about how much you miss your grandfather who you're slowly losing or have lost to Alzheimer's. Also, by eating until she was uncomfortable, she also converted emotional discomfort to physical discomfort. So once we identified that Ariana had trouble identifying and experiencing those painful emotions, she could start learning to process those feelings instead of stuffing them symbolically with something as symbolic as donuts. And she learned how to respond differently to herself when something bothered her eventually. Yes, it took time. It is hard to change, but change is possible. And eventually she stopped craving donuts. And, you know, like now she says, like, sometimes she'll have a donut, but she can stick to one or a bite or a donut whole, and she doesn't have that crazy, like overwhelming compulsion that seems unstoppable. So that is for Kayla and anyone out there who can relate to this story, whether it's donuts or anything else that you are struggling with. Think about what's going on right before you start thinking about food. Whatever is going on, whatever you're thinking about, whatever you're stopping yourself from thinking about, it has everything to do with the trigger. The trigger is what's going on. You're not being triggered by food. Okay, let's see. Here is another question that I get a lot. So I've gotten this question from a lot of people. And again, I invite you to join me if you have any questions. Give me a call. I would love to hear from you. It's like magic. I said, give me a call. And here's Nicole. It's like magic. Give me a call. And here you are. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, how are you, Dr. Nina?
I'm well, thank you.
I was listening to the donut story, the hole in her life. I love that.
I mean, good.
I don't love that she had a hole in her life, but I love that you made that connection.
Yes, and when you start being curious instead of critical, you make those connections, and it's fascinating. It's kind of like being a detective of the mind.
I like that. last week, you know, we were talking, and you told me to really, like, listen to my body and ask myself, like, well, what do you feel like eating? Protein, carbs? Like, what do you want? Do you want a fruit? Do you want vegetables? What do you feel like eating? And, you know, I'm really trying to practice that. I'm trying to tap into that and really just, like, you know, I try to ask myself, like, Nicole, what do you want? What do you need? What do you feel like? But it's so difficult.
Yes.
Because I almost feel like I've trained myself to kind of shut that off. So now I'm trying to, like, turn it back on again.
It is hard. I just want to acknowledge it's very hard, but practice makes progress.
Yeah. So I'm trying to practice that. I just feel like, I don't know. I know that diets don't work. And I know that I call often asking about the last 5 pounds and how to lose weight and all that stuff, but I'm just kind of in a place where, like, I don't even know. I know I should just listen to my body and what I want, but I'm in a place where, like, I don't even know. I'm like, well, I want to lose a couple of pounds. Like, which diet should I do this week? Keto, High protein, low carb. Like, I don't even know what to eat. Like, I'm just confused.
And so you're in a conflict. Part of you knows that diets don't work, and is trusting me enough to call every week and talk about this, that when I tell you that actually the path to losing weight is most people when they go off diets rather than being on it off, you know, yo-yo dieting. But another part of you, so part of you is on board with that idea, and it sounds like another part of you is scared to embrace that idea.
That's absolutely correct. I am scared to embrace the idea.
Okay, so what are your fears? What do you think is going to happen?
I'm just afraid that I'm going to gain weight. Okay, feel like if I actually listen to what I want, like, oh, Nicole, you feel like, I know you said that no one ever feels like eating pizza or two milkshakes, but like, if I really wanted to eat what I felt like what if I'm really craving pasta? And I'm like, well, Dr. Nina said, eat what you feel like. So if I go and eat pasta, I'm gonna feel bad about it. So I'm afraid of listening to what my body wants and then feeling guilty and then getting fat. That's the fear.
Okay. So you have these sort of black and white ideas that eating pasta is gonna make you gain weight. You know, it's not, it's like eating a slice or two of bread is not gonna make you gain weight. Eating half a loaf of bread is going to make you gain weight. Eating too much is what makes people gain weight. So just let's try to break down what your ideas are about how this weight gain is going to happen. When you say if you crave pasta, which you might, because sometimes we do crave those kind of carbs, or not crave, but want, feel for.
Right.
Sometimes you do. How is that, in your mind, how is that going to translate into gaining weight?
So I'm going to eat the pasta, then I'm going to feel like bloated and fat and, oh my God, I just ate pasta. And then I'm going to feel bad about it, so I'm going to eat more because I feel so guilty about eating the pasta. I'm just going to like eat everything. Well, I eat the pasta, let me eat the ice cream, let me eat the pistachio gelato, like, okay. Let me go eat this and that, and then it's just, I'm going to feel so big and I'm going to just be fat.
Okay. So, and so there are a couple of things going on here, but how do you define, I call it the F word because it's an offensive
fat
word. Yeah. Let's call it the F word. How do you define the F word when you say you're going to be it? What are you talking about?
Big. But pump,
so
fat around.
Okay. So
fat on my body.
Okay. So you're gonna have one night of, and what sounds like from your perspective, debauched eating.
Yes.
You know,
debauched,
debauched, non-dieting. You're gonna go crazy. You're gonna eat the kitchen, and then the next day, how much weight will you have gained?
Like 2 pounds.
How much?
2 pounds.
So,
but I know it's not actual weight.
Okay.
Because I know each pound, it's that you have to consume 3,500 calories to gain 1 pound, and I probably would not have consumed 7,000 calories. But even it's like water retention, and then you feel big, and then you're bloated, and then nothing looks good, and then you just like expand and you inflate.
Okay. It sounds like you just feel like you're blowing up like a balloon. So part of your mind knows you will not have actually gained 2 pounds, but part of you can't bear the big feeling and all that is attached to that. And then you feel bad about yourself, which of course leads to,
That's it.
So the problem here is not pasta. Because the problem here is the guilt that follows pasta, eating pasta.
Yes.
So if you just ate pasta for dinner, then you would just have a meal.
You're right.
But because you have ideas about pasta and guilt about eating it, and then right. another black and white. Well, I ate pasta, so I might as well eat all that other stuff, all that other good stuff that I don't let myself eat, by the way. Deprivation leads to binging. That's what the problem is. If you had permission to eat pasta and said, I ate pasta, that was good. I liked it. I feel like I'm in Italy.
Right.
I'm in Rome. I'm in Florence. I'm in Venice. I'm eating pasta. It's so delicious. You know, no guilt. Right. No guilt. Then that would be
Right. The problem's not the pasta. The problem is the guilt after eating the pasta. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I need to fix the guilt.
You need to challenge the guilt. Okay, so what is the guilt telling you?
The guilt is telling me you're bad. Why did you eat that? You're going to be big. If you opted to have the branzino and the spinach instead of the pasta, you would feel good about yourself. You would feel light. Tomorrow you wouldn't be puffy and bloated. Well, that's what the guilt is telling me. You're a bad girl. Why did you listen to what you really wanted? You're smarter than that. Nicole, what are you doing? That's the dialogue.
All right. And by the way, the pasta didn't make you feel bloated and fat. It's everything that went, it's the guilt eating that made you feel bloated and the F word. Okay. Yeah. As you say that, and I wrote down some of what you said, so I'm going to read it back to you. And I want you to tell me who's talking. Who does this sound like? You're bad. Why did you eat that? You're a bad girl. You're smarter than that. Who's that?
My mom.
Mm-hmm.
It's my mom.
It's your mom.
It's my mom. Dr. Nina, it's my mom. It's her birthday today. But yeah, it's my mom. I can go thank her for this. I'm kidding. I'm not going to blame her. But yeah, it's my mom. It's my whole life. I was like a chubby kid till I was like 11 or 12. And then when I was 11 or 12, I like joined LA Fitness and I started dieting and like working out every day, and then I became really in shape. But yeah, my whole life, mom, don't eat this, don't eat that. I've been like afraid to like eat in my own kitchen because what if someone catches me eating rice? I'm going to be so embarrassed that I'm eating rice. I shouldn't eat rice. I have to be perfect. I have to be disciplined. It's my mom.
Yeah.
Holy moly, it's my mom.
Yeah. And so
you
said that you don't want to blame her, but I do, and I don't think blame is helpful because blame is just sort of stops it. It's her fault, which no, it's not as simple as that. However, an explanation is very important, and the explanation of, I was a chubby kid, and I felt my mom's disapproval, and like I wasn't good enough for her. And because that's what I'm hearing. And when I got thin, she liked me better. Could be like a feeling like that. And so I realized that because of my mom's efforts, I'm sure just efforts for you to be healthy, but that felt shaming. You got the message that there was something wrong with you if you were not some perfect weight, and that your fears about gaining 2 pounds is, it's like that's a slippery slope into turning back into that chubby kid who was a bad girl because she was chubby.
Yeah, and that my mom won't approve of me, and I'm not going to be looked at as the person who has discipline and is strong and, you know, is strong-willed and is a go-getter and can keep her figure. Yeah, that's the fear.
So you have
I can't believe we tapped into this in 11 minutes and 19 seconds.
Yeah, but you know why we tapped into this in 11 minutes and 19 seconds? Because you've been calling the show every week for weeks and weeks and weeks, months, I think.
Yeah, it's true.
And so all of these conversations, it's not like you're calling me for the first time and boom.
Yeah, it's true.
So you have to give yourself a little bit of credit for kind of being able to tap into that. So as scary as it is, I think you need to do some work around your relationship with your mom, your internalization of, okay, now follow me on this one, okay? Your internalization of your interpretation of her view of you when you were a kid.
Wait, can you say it again? Lost you.
Gosh, I hope so. Okay, so you will have to do some work around how you internalized, took in your interpretation of your mother's view of you when you were
when
a kid.
When I was a kid?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the ideas that you may have had, like that she thought you were a bad girl, that she thought all these bad things about you, that all the bad, not good enoughness that you felt when you were chubby, that somehow if you become chubby at all, you're going to be those bad things. And that's why it's so important to you. So, but it's your view of what you thought she was thinking. We don't know. I mean, she's got her own, probably got her own stuff. I mean, happy birthday to mom, but really, she's got some stuff.
But I know what her stuff is. It's that her mom disapproved of her because she was fat. They were in Iran, and my mom was like 13 or 14 years old. No, younger. My mom would take her, my grandmother would take her to like these diet places because she disapproved of my mother. So I think because my mom's mom disapproved of her being fat, my mom thinks it's like so bad. And so then she put that on me and my sister. So now we're all just messed up.
Yeah, so it's your grandmother's fault. This is called multi-generational transmission process, which is a fancy word for, a fancy phrase for, you know, behavior is, learned behavior is passed on through generations unless it is challenged and unless you stop it by taking a look and saying, wait a minute, is this true? I challenge this idea.
Yeah.
And that's what you're doing. So this is so you don't do it to yourself and you don't do it to any future daughters that you might have.
Yeah, and you've my kids, because I was actually thinking about it. I'm like, I feel bad for my future kids. Like, I'm going to be afraid to give them ice cream. Like, I watch Instagram sometimes and I see moms giving their kids like donuts and ice cream and milkshakes. And I'm like, what's wrong with these people? Like, I judge them. Like, what are they doing giving their kids donuts and ice cream? Are they crazy? And then it started making me think of my own life. And I'm like, when I have kids, I'm not going to give them donuts and ice cream.
And then what's going to happen? Someone's going to be calling my show saying, my mom never gave me donuts and ice cream, and now I can't stop eating it because I was deprived of it my whole life. Okay.
Yeah, so, then it's going to be my fault. So better to fix it now.
That's right. So what you're describing is something that I call the criminalizing food.
Criminalizing food, yes. Mm-hmm.
Because,
so wait, what do I do to get over it? You said to internalize what I think my mom thought of me when I was a kid. How to fix it?
To challenge it. So, what happened was you internalized her voice, just like she internalized her mother's voice, and then on and on and on. So. What you have to do is start taking these ideas like, oh, there's something wrong with people who give their kids ice cream, and challenging that. There's something wrong with me if I eat pasta, and challenging that. I'm a bad girl if I eat something other than what you would probably call clean eating, you know?
Yeah.
Because
salad and protein.
Yeah.
Okay, and I think I know what I have to do.
And so what I suggest for our call next week is think about, just catch some of these ideas. Catch some of these ideas, and whether you challenge them or not, because it's going to be hard to challenge them, just try to catch yourself when you have these thoughts. oh, yeah, those parents shouldn't be doing that. Any shouldn't kind of thought. Just write it down. The first step is to see what these ideas are. That's the first step to challenging them. So if you can just pay attention to that, even the few that you said today, those parents are terrible. I shouldn't eat pasta.
Okay.
Let's start making note of the ideas that need to change.
Okay. Sounds good. We have a plan.
We have a plan.
I'm on it.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nina. I feel like that was very productive.
I'm so glad. Yes, I'm glad. Look, this is how the past impacts the present. People are always telling me, why is it about the past? And I'm like, it's not about the past. It's about how the past is alive in the present.
Right, right.
We want the past to be in the past. And this is how you're going to get that. And change your future.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
You're
I'm going to listen to the show.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Okay. Talk soon. Bye. Bye.
Okay. That was powerful. Thank you, Nicole, for being willing to go there. Because it's a lot easier to talk about 2 pounds than it is to talk about shame or all of that, or the idea that there's something wrong with you and that you're just staving it off. People won't see that there's something wrong with you as long as you're at a certain weight. But if you're at a different weight, they're going to see the bad in you. That's scary. Oh, here's another call. Hold on. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina. It's Brian from Chicago.
Hey, Brian from Chicago. How are you?
Doing well, just sort of, crazed as usual. But I was listening to your show from last week about exercising for health, as opposed to, that trade-off that I think we all do where we're like, okay, if I ate a piece of cake this morning, then I need an extra half an hour of cardio this afternoon, that kind of balancing thing. So my question is, how do you make the switch from that mindset to a better, healthier mindset that you're not exercising as some sort of wages of sin thing, but you're exercising because you just like feeling good and try to get the other stuff out of your head?
Yeah, that's a great question, because what you're really saying is, how do you change the way you think? One thing is to see how the current mindset serves you. So if you have this idea of, hey, you know what? If I eat cake in the morning, I will just exercise it off in the afternoon. What is keeping that idea in place? What does that do for you or for, what does that do for you? How does thinking that way benefit you? I mean, I have a few ideas if you're drawing blanks.
That's what I'm calling about.
Okay. So one way it could be helping you is it gives you the illusion of sort of omnipotence, over your life. That you can, if you do something, you can undo it. Like it feels good to feel like you've got that amount of control over your life. I ate cake, so I can undo it by being on the treadmill or the elliptical. Therefore, you feel super in control of your life. If you give up that notion, then so you're not just giving up the idea, you're giving up the sense of having total control over aspects of your life. Make sense?
That does.
So, whether and people could have, different reasons for hanging on to these ideas, but until you see how it serves you, you can't really change. Like people all the time will be like, "Well, that makes sense. I intellectually get it, but I can't make the switch from my head to my heart." I think that's your question. So you got to look at, what is it that keeps it in place? And then what's it like to imagine, for example, not having such total control over your life? Like, what are the thoughts and feelings around that?
Okay, so again, I guess the question is, how do you make that transition to changing the way you question yourself, I suppose?
So I notice that when you ask me the question, it's, what do I do? And the question is, my question to you is, well, what's uncomfortable about looking at giving up control?
Oh, I think this is more of a general question. Mm. I don't really have those feelings. It's really more of a general question.
Yeah, okay. So for someone who's out there who wants to make a change, you got to dig deeper, right? So you got to say, okay, I know that I know I need to exercise for my body, not to earn calories. I know that, but I can't make the shift. Why? What's scary about changing my mindset? What are the fears about thinking differently? And there usually are fears.
Mm-hmm.
What if I become a slacker? What if I, like, there are all these what ifs. And again, you're calling generally, so you know, I'm just trying to think about things people have said. Or, but it's to make a change, you got to see what keeps it in place and what makes it feel safe. And you got to look at what's scary about the new thought.
Okay, that makes sense. Is that something that folks can dig into a bit on their own, or would you recommend that it maybe requires a little bit of help to begin to self-identify things?
I think it's something that is very difficult to do on your own, because it's very hard to have an objective view of your subjective life experience. You either need someone else guiding you or helping you, or you need something like you know what, Brian? I got to do this. You've given me such an opening that I'm going to shamelessly self-promote. Bear with me. I'm going to shamelessly self-promote. I have a new book coming out in the next couple of months called The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. And one of the things that I do in the book is help guide people to ask the questions they need to ask themselves so that they can find these kinds of answers. Sort of what I do in my online program. There, I got another plug-in. Brian! Thanks for giving me such a good setup. Yeah, I mean, yeah, whether it's
that was the whole point.
whether it is, you know, a therapist, a coach, a book, something to facilitate a different way of thinking, because again, you know, how do you think differently unless someone says, wait, here's a different way to think about it. Here's why you might be thinking about it this way. And here's why you're not thinking about it that way. We have, in this culture, we sort of privilege being independent and never needing any help, as if that's like it makes you morally superior. No, not true. We need to be interdependent. We need to be independent in some ways and then dependent on each other in other ways. And that's the way that the best way to live.
Is it safe to assume that people who have difficulty depending on others for help might also have difficulty looking to themselves to try to change the way that they think about them?
Yes, because often, you know, people who struggle with things around food, weight, body image, all of that, are very busy attacking themselves. And it's when you're in a position of being cruel and mean and critical and judgmental of yourself, it's very hard to then switch gears and be curious and interested and ask clarifying questions of yourself. Those two things don't go together.
Not yet. That's my experience too. Well, this is very, very helpful. I really appreciate it. I'm thankful to say that this is not something that I do, but I could very easily see how the thinking process is a tempting one for somebody who tries to stay active.
Yeah, Yeah. I mean, and it's a good question, and I'm as always glad that you called in with a question that I'm sure that a lot of people are out there thinking, you know, whether it's around this topic or others.
I look forward to being a more frequent caller. It's been a bit.
Well, I look forward to talking to you whenever you can call next. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
I always wonder what happened to people, and I was like, wait, I haven't heard from Brian from Chicago for a while, and then it's like, boom, they're back. So there are a few people I haven't heard from a while. If you're listening, give me a call. Tell me how you're doing. Okay, so the question that I get a lot is, why do some people sabotage their weight loss efforts? And if you listen to the show, you've probably heard me answer this question before, but it's something that, you know, you cannot hear enough. Repetition, when it comes to this, is a good thing. We don't just hear something once and boom, we've got it. We change by over and over and over and over hearing something different, and that's how we form new neural pathways in our brains. Okay, so the question is, why do people sabotage their weight loss efforts? And, you know, you may be one of those people who's always on a diet, but you never reach your goal weight, or you get to a healthy weight, but then it's impossible to maintain, and the weight creeps back on, or I've had a lot of patients who will say, I got to my goal weight and I was elated, and then suddenly I couldn't stop eating. So, I just mentioned my online program, which I have a whole module on how to stop the sabotage. And one of the reasons that people sabotage themselves is they have fears about either expectation or disappointment. Now, that there are a lot more than just those two, but fears of expectation or disappointment is a big one, because they usually have all kinds of ideas about what life is going to be like when they reach that ideal weight. The thin them is going to have a fabulous life, right? The them at the weight that they are, they've got the problems, they've got the job issues, they got the kids that are driving them crazy, or they don't have kids, or they're looking for a partner, or they're lonely, or they got problems in their lives. But in their minds, the thin them will not have such problems. The thin them will feel better about those problems. The thin them will lead a different life. They'll start dating, they'll get divorced, they'll get a new job, they'll just be happier. The thin version of them is going to have the awesome experience of life. So there's this expectation that things are going to be different when you lose weight. There's also an expectation that their personality is going to change by losing weight. I hear this all the time. When I lose weight, I'm going to be confident. When I lose weight, I'm going to, hold on. Speaking of someone I haven't heard of in a while, hello, Nick. Welcome to the show. Nick? Hello? Nick, if you can hear me, I can't hear you. Hello? All right, maybe call me back. Ronan, if you're hearing this, I don't know if it's on Nick's end or ours. There he goes, okay. Well, that was Nick, hope he calls back. Okay, so, yeah, there's this idea that, when you lose weight, your whole like way of being in the world will change. You know, people tell me that they're going to go to parties. Right now they go to parties and they walk into the room and they feel shy and they just want to hide from life. But when they lose weight, they're going to walk into that party and they're going to be just like talking to people and having a great time and life of the party and outgoing and wonderful. Yeah. You know what? If you're insecure at your current weight, you will probably be similarly insecure at a lower weight. If you're shy, you are not going to become outgoing when you lose weight. Your personality does not change because you lose weight. It's as simple as that. You're you. You're just smaller. So part of why people sabotage their weight loss efforts is exactly that. What if those things don't happen? What if that fantasy thin you doesn't get to exist? What if everything in life stays exactly the same except for the label size on your clothes and, you know, the number on the scale? So I had a patient once who had a hard time getting into a relationship, and she always blamed it on her weight. I think Ronan just did a few things on the computer. So Nick, if you can, please call me back and let's give it another try. And I hope you get through. Okay, so my patient thought if she were thinner, she could get a boyfriend more easily. And you know what? She lost weight and she still did not get a boyfriend. She had to face the fact that maybe it was not her weight that was keeping her from having a relationship. And she had to give up the idea that she could resolve life issues, losses, disappointments in life by changing her body. Another reason for diet sabotage is anxiety about happiness. And, you know, most people, when I say this, look at me like I've got like four eyes or something. Well, I do when I wear glasses, but like maybe three eyes, like I'm Cyclops. No, is that one eye? I can't keep it straight. Okay. They look at me like I'm really weird. And they say, "What are you talking about? I am miserable at this weight. Of course I'll be happier if I lose weight. What are you talking about, Dr. Nina? I'm not afraid of happiness." But when we dig deeper, we discover some anxieties attached to happiness. What are they? Some people are afraid to be, quote unquote, too happy in case it's taken away from them. I remember one woman, her mother told her something happened to her that was very disappointing. And her mother said to her, instead of, "I'm so sorry, that's very disappointing," her mom said to her, "Well, you were flying so high, I knew you couldn't stay up there." Nice, huh? So some people are afraid to be too happy because it might be taken away from them. The higher you get, the farther you fall. Or using another metaphor, they think the rug is going to be pulled out from underneath them, as if by daring to be happy, they're inviting punishment from the universe. And as long as they're unhappy with their weight, they feel safe from other bad things. Hey, if I'm not happy with my weight, that's the bad thing that's going on in my life, so other bad things won't happen to me. Now, does anyone consciously think this? No, nobody consciously thinks this. But it's our unconscious thoughts. They unconsciously think this. And once you make that conscious, bring it into awareness, realize you have these ideas, then you can challenge them, and then you can find a different way of being. Another reason why happiness can be a fear is that people attach a positive meaning to unhappiness, almost like it's noble to suffer. True artists must suffer. Being miserable makes you a better person. Oh, that's a big one. That's a big one. Being miserable somehow makes you more moral and better. And if you're happier and you have abundance, you're just not that much of a moral person. Yeah, let's leave morality out of this, because your morality has to do with what you do in the world, you know, not how much you suffer. I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of comments on that from people who are religious, but these are my beliefs. But feel free to write me. Keep in mind, these are all unconscious ideas. Once you make them conscious, once you challenge them, it's easier to stop the sabotage. Because when you say, you know what, I don't have to suffer. You know, bad things don't invariably follow good things. By the way, that's the most common thing I hear. Well, you know, this bad thing happened because that good thing happened to me last week. It's never the other way around, by the way. It's never, this bad thing really happened to me, so I'm expecting that good thing to happen next week. I'm waiting for it. No. There's some pattern in our minds. We like to make patterns as humans, but sometimes we make patterns out of where we see patterns where there are no patterns. So something good happens, and then something bad happens, and you tie it together as if those things are correlated, and they're not. And when you could say, wait, No, that good thing happened to me last week. This good thing happened to me today. Or wait, I got this good thing happened to me, bad thing happened to me today. Those things have nothing to do with each other. This is just the randomness of the universe and the world. This didn't happen to me because a good thing happened. The universe is not taking it away from me. Then you could allow the good instead of being afraid of it. Okay. Hey, Nick, sorry you couldn't get through. I understand we're still having issues. Hopefully you'll call in next week. Here's another question I get a lot. What are some practical strategies you can do to make realistic and long-term changes? Okay, here's one thing you could do today, right now. Get rid of your scale. Get rid of your scale. If you've ever gotten up in the morning in a good mood until suddenly you step on the scale, you see a number that ruins your day, if that has been your experience, get rid of the scale. Rethink your relationship to your scale. Do not let a piece of plastic and metal have that much control over your well-being and sense of self. Another thing you could do is really watch that inner critic. Turn that inner critic into a friend. And one way you could do this is imagine you have a friend who's upset. They have a fight with their husband or wife. They had a bad day at work. Whatever is going on, they say that they're upset. Do you say to them, "Oh, you're upset? Here, have some cookies. Have some ice cream. Let's eat something." Probably not. Maybe you do, in which case this does not apply to you. But the best way to help someone is to say, like, "I'm really sorry you're upset." Validate it. Acknowledge it. That's really tough. How can I help? You got to practice doing that for yourself. Acknowledge what you're feeling. Ask yourself what you need. If you wouldn't say it to a friend, a child, or someone you love, don't say it to yourself. Got to stop this awful critic. The critic in your head is the problem. Food is what silences the critic. Okay? Food is the solution to the problem, and the problem is the critic, the judge, the meanie, the mean girl or mean guy in your head. So those two things are very, very important. Get rid of the scale. Stop measuring yourself by a number and start catching that critic and then challenging it. A way that you can do that is to mind the pronoun that you use about yourself. When Nicole was talking to herself and she was saying, "You're a bad girl. You have no you. And then when we explored it and she said, "Wait, that's my mom." She was talking to herself in a critical voice. Yes, it was the voice of her mom. When you talk to yourself from a perspective of second person pronoun, it's easier to criticize yourself. Try catching that and switching it to I. Like, I bet if Nicole was on the phone with me right now and I had said, "What would it be like to say, I'm a bad girl?" I don't think that would be as easy for her to say as it is to talk to her as her critic. So, you know, practice catching yourself talking in second person. Also, notice the tone you're using. And try to use the I, come from I, that puts you like really more within yourself. It's harder to be mean to yourself when you're coming from an I place. And as always, practice with all of these things, practice makes progress. So thank you so much for joining me today on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am so glad to spend this hour with you. And if you like the show, if you love the show, please take a moment to write a review on Apple Podcasts. You can find it under the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. Thank you so much. And I will see you next week. No, I will not see you next week. I will be gone next week. I will be back live in 2 weeks. Next week will be a best of. So I'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.